Hi, I'm Dave Emery. This is Side 2 of For the Record, program number 754, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 1, Dramatis Personae. This is being recorded on September 1st of the year 2013. Again, I have published posted the equivalent of a small book about the NSA quote disclosures, Eddie the Friendly Spook, and the whole cast of characters. Go to the SpitfireList.com website, bring up the news and supplemental category, and by the end of the week there will be 20 posts already constituting a small book in and of themselves. We're going to be doing a number of shows about the investigation. It is very, very complicated, multi-layered, and dramatically opposed to the way that the mainstream media, and especially the so-called progressive media, have been representing it. And for that reason, I think it may make it easier to understand this admittedly complex analysis by taking a look at the major players, the dramatis personae. So that's what we're doing. We're going to continue with our examination of Citizen Greenwald. That's Glenn Greenwald, the lawyer turned journalist who was Eddie Snowden's leaker of choice, so to speak. Now, as we have been looking at, before Glenn Greenwald was a journalist, he was a lawyer, and he spent years representing some of the most heinous Nazi and white supremacist organizations, and doing so pro bono. Most interesting to me is his work on behalf of the National Alliance, whose publishing arm, National Vanguard Books, publishes Serpent's Walk, about which we've spoken so many times. They published the Turner Diaries and the book Hunter, which is specifically intended as a motivational / instructional manual for racist killers. And I would note that, again, what Glenn Greenwald is in effect doing by protecting the, quote, free speech rights, unquote, of interests like this is running a very successful legal interference for the leaderless resistance strategy that has been embraced by Nazi and white supremacist groups. Instead of getting together and planning a murder or a bank robbery or a terrorist incident, they basically rely on individuals and small groups of individuals who are motivated by their political polemics to do that on their own. And again, what Greenwald has done is to protect the organizations advocating overt racism and Nazi doctrine from civil suits from the victims of some of the followers of these organizations. And one of the groups that Glenn Greenwald represented, again, is the National Alliance, headed by William Luther Pierce. One of the books they published was the Turner Diaries. The Turner Diaries were specifically the motivational tool for the Nazi terrorist group The Order that operated in the 1980s. They robbed a bunch of armored cars. They also were best known for murdering Denver talk show host Alan Berg. The movie Talk Radio by Oliver Stone and the book Talked to Death by Steven Singler are about the murder of Alan Berg. And The Order, about whom we're going to speak later in this side, was motivated by the Turner Diaries published by Glenn Greenwald's client, the National Alliance. Their books are intended as teaching and motivational tools, and it was their right to, quote, free speech that was defended, successfully too, by the way, by Glenn Greenwald. A post in the Counterpunch magazine, October 29, 2001, called Neo-Nazis and 911 by Jack McCarthy, discusses a 1998 radio address by William Luther Pierce of the National Alliance, Glenn Greenwald's client. And as McCarthy notes, and quoting here from the excerpt, The running theme in Peirce's commentaries is, to paraphrase his hero Hitler, that Osama bin Laden's warning to America is, I am coming, and so is bioterrorism. And in one 1998 radio broadcast by William Luther Peirce, Glenn Greenwald's client, it's called Stay Out of Tall Buildings, unquote. Peirce went on to say, quote, New Yorkers who work in tall office buildings anything close to the size of the World Trade Center might want to consider wearing hard hats. And he also basically said that bioterrorism is coming as well. I think it is fairly apparent that this theme, this broadcast, I should say, foreshadows not only the World Trade Center attacks, but also the anthrax attacks that happened a few years later. We have spoken about the many Nazi and fascist connections to 9/11 many times. One wonders if perhaps some of the 9/11 conspirators were also among those who found inspiration from the motivational novels, so to speak, of the National Alliance, Glenn Greenwald's client. I would note that the climactic episode in the Turner Diaries is a low-level suicide attack against the Pentagon. Of course, I'm just a crazy conspiracy theorist from California, and this, the Turner Diaries, is just a novel. We all know that there couldn't be a low-level suicide aerial attack against the Pentagon, don't we? Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, in the Turner Diaries, it is accomplished by a crop duster plane with a small nuclear warhead in it. I would note that the 9/11 hijackers were training on crop dusters, which can fly very low, they're very maneuverable, and actually would be relatively impervious in much terrain to anti-aircraft fire if they flew low enough and maneuvered skillfully enough. By the way, the attack on the Pentagon in the Turner Diaries takes place on November 9th. That is the German Day of Destiny. Hitler's beer hall putsch took place on November 9th, 1923, and that has been a key date for Nazis ever since. Die Kristallnacht, the first great Germany-wide anti-Jewish pogrom organized by the Nazis, was on November 9th, 1938, a provocation that was an alleged attempt on the life of Hitler, took place on November 9th, 1940, and was used to stir up sentiment against France and to whip up war fervor for a push west after the relatively easy German military success in Poland. The Berlin Wall, by the way, came down on November 9th, 1989. How would a German write the date November 9th? They would write it 9/11. Think about that. We mentioned, by the way, that the Berlin Wall came down on November 9th of 1989. The reunification of Germany was arranged by Helmut Kohl's chief of staff, Günter Strassmayr, who was the son of one of the founding members of the NSDAP, the German Nazi Party under Adolf Hitler. His son, Andreas Strassmayr, was a German army intelligence officer. He later went to the U.S., where he became the security officer for a white supremacist compound in Oklahoma called Elohim City. An undercover ATF informant named Carol Howe testified, and her testimony has never been impeached, that Andreas Strassmayr was actually the real planner of the Oklahoma City bombing, and that Timothy McVeigh was basically his protege. Although we can't obviously show you pictures on radio, in this particular post from which I'm reading, called Snowden's Ride, Part 7, Citizen Greenwald, the National Alliance, and the Underground Reich, there are some pictures of the composite photos of John Doe number 2, with a number of photographs of Andreas Strassmayr taken from a security camera. And the physical resemblance is very, very strong indeed. Now, I mention this because the motivational instructional manual for of the Oklahoma City bombing was the aforementioned Turner Diaries, published by the National Alliance, whose books are intended as motivational / instructional documents. And again, their rights to, quote, free speech, unquote, defended by Glenn Greenwald. I would note, too, that the motivational tool of the Turner Diaries also was a great influence on a guy named Dr. Larry Ford. Dr. Larry Ford was a doctor. He committed suicide in 2000 after, maybe 1999, after he attempted to murder a business partner. It came out that not only was he an expert on biological warfare, he had worked for the Central Intelligence Agency on the South African apartheid government's Project Coast biological warfare program. The FBI investigated Dr. Larry Ford's milieu in Nevada and Utah in connection with the anthrax attacks, because Project Coast did utilize anthrax as a weapon of war against its anti-apartheid opponents and on behalf of the white supremacist forces in the former colony of Rhodesia. I would note that, as mentioned in the New York Times of November 3rd of 2002, California doctor's suicide leaves many troubling mysteries unsolved by Joe Thomas. We read of the investigation into the possibility that Dr. Ford was connected to the anthrax attacks, not Dr. Ford having done them, because he was dead before that, but perhaps his instructional capabilities were used by the perpetrators of the anthrax attacks. We read, after his death, Detective Ray said the authorities learned that Dr. Ford had been a consultant to Project Coast, which has been accused of creating weapons for use against enemies of apartheid. They also discovered that he held extreme racist views and had once told a girlfriend that to understand him, she should read the Turner Diaries, the anti-Semitic and white supremacist novel popular among far-right groups that prosecutors say inspired the Oklahoma City bombing. So Dr. Ford also among those motivated by the novels of the National Alliance. A piece from the Southern Poverty Law Center in their intelligence report from the fall of 2004, number 115. This is by Camille Jackson. It's titled, The Turner Diaries, Other Racist Novels Inspire Extremist Violence. And again, the point is made here that the books of the National Alliance, the Turner Diaries, Hunter, and the others, specifically are motivational tools for their followers. And again, Glenn Greenwald was defending the National Alliance and similar groups against civil suits filed by the victims of the violence perpetrated by some of their adherents and foot soldiers. This under a free speech / constitutional liberties rubric. I would note that Greenwald didn't appear overly concerned about the constitutional liberties of those who got shot and murdered by these very same elements. Again, talking about the order of Robert Matthews, which killed Alan Berg and robbed a number of armored cars in the 1980s. From the book Brotherhood and Murder by Thomas Martinez, a member of the group who later became an informant, on page 234 of the Google Books file, on this online file, we read of Robert Matthews, some very old German families in South America were giving Robert Matthews, leader of the order, some money. Now, I wonder who those old German families were. By the way, in a For the Record program, the description and audio file for which are linked in this post, called the Manfred Raeder file, we note that German Nazi Manfred Raeder, last name R-O-E-D-E-R, had received active assistance from the contemporary German military. And skipping down in this book, Brotherhood Murder by Thomas Martinez, of networking between German neo-Nazis and the Old Guard in Latin America, we read as follows of Manfred Rader. And again, I refer listeners to the For the Record show called The Manfred Rader File. It's linked in this post. Martinez writes, for example, as long ago as 1978, Manfred Rader, who headed the remnants of the German Nazi Party, again, I talk about an underground Reich, that's what I mean, beginning again, and bear in mind that Manfred Rader was aided by the German army, the Bundeswehr. Manfred Rader, who headed the remnants of the German Nazi Party, traveled to Brazil, where he met with Josef Mengele and other Nazi leaders. Immediately afterward, Rader traveled to the United States, where he met with Dr. William Pierce, among others, of course, William Pierce, William Luther Pierce, head of the National Alliance, Glenn Greenwald's client. So what we basically have here is a milieu that encompasses not only people like Manfred Rader and Robert Matthews of the Order and the old German families in South America, unquote, who were funding the Order, but also Josef Mengele and Dr. William Pierce, Glenn Greenwald's client. I would also note again that Glenn Greenwald has, he resides in Brazil. He went down there, he says, to basically get over his broken heart. For 11 years, Greenwald had a romantic slash relationship with an Austrian-born lawyer named Werner Aschatz, A-C-H-A-T-Z. They practiced law together, and I guess in the evening did the wild things, so to speak. That may have been all there was to it, a professional and romantic slash sexual relationship, but practicing law in New York City, and that appears to be where his practice is, from what I can tell, that is a very expensive place to live, and I don't think Greenwald and Aschatz were living in a basement apartment in the South Bronx and practicing law out of there. He was practicing, did much of his practice pro bono in New York City. I wonder about Werner Aschatz. Again, they were partners and legal partners. Maybe that was all there was to it. I wonder about the possibility, again, of Werner Aschatz, his Austrian-born lawyer, being more than that, perhaps some sort of a case officer or underground Reich paymaster. Again, that is obviously speculation, but I wonder, where was Glenn Greenwald getting all of his money? Practicing law in New York City is expensive, and you don't get money representing people pro bono. Now, there is another very interesting case in which Glenn Greenwald represented Matthew Hale, again, the fellow whose follower Benjamin Smith went on a two-state shooting spree, or maybe it was three states, gunned down a whole bunch of people, African Americans, Asian Americans, Jews, some of whom died, some of whom survived. Then Hale was sued by some of the victims and the victims' families for basically instigating Benjamin Smith's escapade. Glenn Greenwald successfully represented Hale and did so pro bono, apparently violated some legal ethics and was cited by the judge for that when the plaintiff's counsel objected. Hale also was convicted of soliciting the murder of a judge, Judge Joan Lefkow, or Lefkow, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, L-E-F-K-O-W, and in this case as well, he was represented by Glenn Greenwald. And the behavior and statements of the people involved in this, including Glenn Greenwald, I think are more than a little interesting. People may have seen a story about a white supremacist slash Nazi named Paul Cobb, who was in the news because he is attempting to buy up, he is buying property in North Dakota in a tiny little town called Leith, or Leith, I'm not sure how it is pronounced, it's spelled L-E-I-T-H. And an article in the New York Times of August 29th of 2013 titled New Neighbors Agenda, White Power Takeover, by John Elligon, E-L-I-G-O-N, reads in part, the bearded man with thinning gray and bleach blonde hair flapping down his neck first appeared in this tiny agricultural town last year, quietly and inconspicuously roaming the crackly dirt roads, and then skipping down, talking about how he just seemed to be a regular old guy. But all that changed last week. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Bismarck Tribune revealed that the man, Paul Craig Cobb, 61, has been buying up property in this town of 24 people in an effort to transform it into a colony for white supremacists. And more about Paul Cobb, or Craig Cobb, you'll see him as Craig Cobb or Paul Craig Cobb, and in his Wikipedia article, we read the following. By the way, he attended an invitation-only leadership conference of the National Alliance. That, of course, was another of the Nazi groups represented by Glenn Greenwald. And they are the publishers, of course, of Turner Diaries, Serpent's Walk, and Hunter. And their books are specifically intended as teaching tools. Now, of Craig Cobb or Paul Craig Cobb, we read the following. While, again, this is from his Wikipedia entry, while his internet activities center upon tireless propaganda, unquote, for Podblank, that, by the way, was an Estonian-based blog that he did, continuing, he is also active in far-right discussion boards where, after the arrest of Matt Hale in 2003 for soliciting the murder of U.S. District Judge Joan Lefkoe, Cobb posted the judge's home address, family photographs, and a map to her house. Lefkoe's husband and mother were subsequently murdered. In reply to a reporter's question, quote, what were you feeling when the double murder happened, unquote, Cobb stated, quote, what was I feeling? Emotions aren't illegal yet. I was just fine with it. I think it was well done. And by the way, this is the very essence of the leaderless resistance strategy for which Glenn Greenwald is running legal interference. Now, in the historycommons.org profile of Matthew Hale, there is discussion of this case, talking about Cobb. Cobb was a member of the Violent World Church of the Creator until its collapse after its leader, Matthew Hale, was arrested for soliciting the murder of a judge. And again, Cobb, a member of Hale's organization, posted the name, family photographs, or the address, family photographs, and a map to Judge Lefkoe's home. Her husband and mother, who was living with her and her husband, were murdered. She came home from work and found the two of them murdered. Now, again, after talking about Cobb posting the name and address of the judge and family photographs on the internet, skipping down, Hale recently claimed Lefkoe was prejudiced against him because she's married to a Jew and has children who are biracial. And then after the conviction, U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald adds, quote, freedom of speech does not include the freedom to solicit murder. And yet more about the trial. Eventually, again, although Hale was not convicted of the murder of Judge Lefkoe's husband and mother, he was convicted of soliciting the judge's murder. Again, from the History Commons profile, the jury heard audio tapes of Hale laughing about Smith's murders and mocking the victims. That, by the way, was in the civil suit in which Glenn Greenwald successfully defended Matthew Hale. Again, the jury heard audio tapes of Hale laughing about Smith's murders and mocking the victims. More about Glenn Greenwald and his representation, of Matthew Hale. Hale was taped, skipping down in this History Commons entry. Evola was an undercover FBI informant. Evola provided FBI officials with an email from Hale soliciting Lefkoe's home address and a tape recording of a discussion between the two about Lefkoe's murder. On the tape, Evola said, quote, "Are we going to exterminate the rat?" Hale replied, "Well, whatever you want to do, basically," Evola said, "the Jew rat." Hale then said, "You know, my position has always been that I'm going to fight within the law, but that information has been provided," parenthetically, by Hale's follower, Paul Craig Cobb, continuing, if you wish to do anything yourself, you can." Evola replied, "Consider it done." And Hale responded, quote, "Good," unquote. Again, Evola said the Jew rat. Hale then said, "My position has always been that I'm going to fight within the law, but that information has been provided. If you wish to do anything yourself, you can." Evola replied, "Consider it done." And Hale responded, "Good." Now, Greenwald, again, who was representing Hale, again from the History Commons, reading here, attorney Glenn Greenwald, representing Hale, says he believed the charge against Hale stems from what he calls a misinterpretation of Hale's statement that, quote, "we are in a state of war with Judge Lefkoe." Greenwald says, "They are probably trying to take the things he said along the lines of political advocacy and turn it into a crime. The FBI may have interpreted this protected speech as a threat against a federal judge, but it's probably nothing more than some heated rhetoric," unquote. During Hale's incarceration, special administrative measures will be imposed to reduce his ability to communicate with his followers. And then skipping down, Hale's attorney Glenn Greenwald reveals that 6 to 8 weeks before the murders, Hale's mother asked him to pass what was a clearly coded message from Hale to a World Church of the Creator follower. Greenwald says he did not pass on the message. So again, we have Glenn Greenwald representing Matthew Hale, apparently pro bono, in a case in which Hale was convicted of soliciting the murder of a judge. The judge was not killed, but one of his followers posted her address, a map to her home, and photographs of her family. Her husband and mother were then murdered after that. And again, Greenwald says, well, it's probably just the FBI misinterpreting some lawfully protected speech. Glenn, old buddy, it's a little bit more than that. The point being, and we're running out of time here, but the point being here that the entire investigation in which we are going to be looking at the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook is very complex. It's multi-layered. It certainly is an underground operation, but the exact executive authority beyond Underground Reich is somewhat less clear. It might be an underground Reich element, within CIA. I suspect BND, but we are going into the dramatis personae to get an idea of just what is going on. Because with Glenn Greenwald, to make a long story short, no one who does what he did can possibly be what he claims to be. He doesn't care about others or their rights or their welfare. This concludes Side 2. For the record, program number 754, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 1, Dramatis Personae, subtitled Gruppenführer Greenwald. And this is being recorded on September 1st of the year 2013. My name is Jay Remery. Thanks for listening.